Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Film Spotting is brought to you by Film Spotting listeners who support us on Patreon. Family members get ad-free episodes, merch discounts, live monthly trivia, monthly bonus shows, and pre-sales on live events.
Live events like our Sunday, June 5th screening and podcast recording with Slate's Dana Stevens at Chicago's Music Box Theater. More information about that event at filmspotting.net/events. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/filmspotting.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
You're not interested in art?
No.
Now look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting. I'm Josh Larson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar.
These hands were once used for battle. Now they're but humble tools for peace. I need to figure out exactly who I am.
Who is Thor really? Is, spoilers, not among my top five questions about the summer movie season, Josh. What about you?
No, not on my list, though I have a feeling Debbie, my wife, she may have a question or two about Thor's fitness level going into this movie.
This week on the show, it is our summer movie preview with new films from Jordan Peele, Claire Denis, and David Cronenberg. What says summer other than that trifecta? Well, there's Marvel and Pixar mixed in there as well. We've got lots to look forward to and some questions.
Those questions and more ahead on Film Spotting.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome to Film Spotting. It's summer movie preview time, Josh. Maybe just a little bit early. It's barely gotten to summer here in Chicago in terms of the weather, and we do still have a couple of weeks to go before Memorial Day weekend, which actually I have taken to referring to as International Top Gun Maverick Day.
I don't think they celebrate that in... Who are they fighting? What was the dogfight? Was it the Soviets? Was it North Korea? Did we ever find out?
It was the Soviets.
Not celebrated in the USSR or modern-day Russia, I would imagine.
No, probably not. Before we get to that summer preview, we do want to talk briefly about what we think is truly the event of the summer. Sunday afternoon, June 5th, we will be at Chicago's beloved Music Box Theater. And, oh, not just us. Dana Stevens from Slate and the Culture Gab Fest will be there. And Buster Keaton will be there because we are going to screen the final movie in our Buster Keaton marathon, live on the big screen, 1928's The Cameraman, with accompaniment, a score produced just for the occasion by music box organist Dennis Scott.
Yeah, Buster Keaton, really the king of the summer blockbuster. I think that's, he kicked it all off, didn't he, 100 years ago or so?
Indeed. Dana, of course, is the author of the new book, Cameraman, Buster Keaton, The Dawn of Cinema and the Invention of the 20th Century. She helped curate our Keaton Marathon. She will be there for a post-screening conversation that we will record and we will play here on Film Spotting. We'll talk about Keaton. We'll talk about The Cameraman specifically, and then she'll help us wrap up the marathon with our Keaton Marathon Awards. It's maybe about time here as we look ahead to next week, the fourth film in the six film marathon, a few more than that if you count the shorts we did to kick it off. And maybe we should start thinking about what we're going to call the awards. The stone faces, maybe something like that. There's many more creative listeners out there, Josh. I'm sure they have good ideas.
Yeah, send those ideas in. And we hope to see a good number of you on Sunday, June 5. Again, it's going to be 3 p.m. This is one of those film spotting events you should bring the whole family to. I think the time and the film are friendly to that. So maybe bring everyone along. Tickets are on sale now. And that includes a limited number of VIP tickets we're offering with this. That's going to get you access to the pre-event green room. So Adam and I are going to be hanging out there with Dana and some of the other Chicago critics, you know, Michael Phillips, Keith Phipps, maybe a few others. So we're going to be there hanging out in the Music Box Lounge, a great spot. There's more information at filmspotting.net/events.
Yeah, or you can go right to the main page of filmspotting.net and you can't miss it. You can see links to get more info and to purchase those VIP passes or the non-VIP general admission tickets. We do look forward to seeing many of you there. With that, let's get to our summer movie preview. The way we do them here on Film Spotting, a little unconventional. They end up more often than not when we do these previews to be a little bit off the beaten path, maybe a little more art house than mainstream. That doesn't make as much sense, probably, Josh, when we're talking about summer films. But usually we're looking for some of the hidden gems, maybe even films that we weren't aware were coming out until we started doing our research. And I know we'll have a few of those. We may sprinkle in a few bigger titles as well. Where did you go to start your countdown?
I started with one of the big titles, and my first question about this summer is, will we reach a low point of reheatery with Lightyear? This is the Pixar summer installment. Now, sequels, prequels, remakes, etc., those are all reheats of sorts, but Lightyear, it really does seem to be something new in the dark arts of unoriginal ideas. I knew Lightyear was coming. I was aware of this, but I didn't really know what they were trying to pull off. Until I began researching it for these lists, Adam. Apparently, this is supposed to be the movie that the toy, Buzz Lightyear, was based on in 1995's Toy Story. So, remember our Star Wars action figures, Adam?
I'm already lost.
I'm going to try to help you here. See if this helps, okay?
I do. I do very much.
If Toy Story, the movie, was the tale of those action figures, our Star Wars action figures, then Lightyear is essentially Star Wars, okay? The movie that they were based on.
Okay.
Now, of course, that movie Star Wars existed. This one was just entirely made up for this whole project. So we're used to intellectual properties eating their own tails. This is a whole nother level of gobbling that is going on here. Another question that maybe hasn't ever been considered in this whole process, can this possibly be any good? Or is it just another way to expand the Toy Story universe? Well, here are some early indicators. Take them for what you will. There's no Tim Allen, the inimitable voice of Buzz Lightyear. Chris Evans, instead, is filling in there. The screenwriter for Lightyear is Jason Headley, who wrote Pixar's Onward. And the director is Angus McLane, a Pixar veteran who co-directed Finding Dory. So I'm not sure how much confidence that gives people when they hear that. I can't say I felt a particular need for this extension of the Toy Story narrative, but maybe I will be proven wrong. It is Pixar after all. They have a fairly strong track record in general, but also I would say in continuing the Toy Story narrative. So maybe they'll pull this one off as well. We'll find out on June 17.
Tim Allen was too busy.
Good question. I don't know. What is he up to these days?
That's my question. That's my number five. Actually, I'm now inserting it into my summer movie preview. Actually, my number five question of the summer movie season is, will Martin McDonagh's brother, John Michael, heal our brotherly battle over Three Billboards with The Forgiven?
You didn't need to bring Three Billboards into this.
Well,
it's the other guy.
I always enjoy it so much, Josh. We both really like Calvary. I loved Calvary, which was John Michael McDonagh's film starring Brendan Gleeson back in 2014. It was number 9 on my top 10 films of the year. Did not make your top 10, but yes, you did think it was very good. Got a very glowing review here on the show. And seeing this title in my research and thinking about that film, I realized that it's really a shame that I haven't seen any of John Michael McDonough's other films. And in fact, he hasn't put out a film since 2016. So it's been 5 years. That one in 2016 was War on Everyone. And then prior to Calvary, he made his debut as a writer and director with The Guard, Don Cheadle, and that also Brendan Gleeson. They both sound really interesting, and yet I have never made time for them. But here we're talking about The Forgiven, which takes place over the course of a weekend in Morocco. And there is an accident that, from what I can tell, takes place among the locals and then some of our visitors who are maybe a little bit more privileged as they party in their big villa. Those partiers include Ralph Fiennes, Jessica Chastain, really good cast. Matt Smith is in it, Caleb Landry Jones, Christopher Abbott, and an actress, I'll probably get the last name incorrect, Marie-Josée Croce. That name stands out because she was one of my favorite actresses of the year back in 07 when The Diving Bell and the Butterfly came out. She's the nurse, or one of the main nurse characters that helps Matthew Almerich's character in that wonderful film. And maybe what stands out to me, besides that cast and the fact that it's John Michael McDonough giving us another film, is that when you first Google it, it's listed as a drama slash mystery. And if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, where there are 17 reviews so far, 13 of them positive, coming out of its premiere in Toronto at the fest there last fall, you see so many descriptors, Josh. There's satire, psychological thriller, crime thriller, dark comedy, and shaggy hangout movie. There's also a line from one critic that it takes some extremely questionable behavior and makes it as intriguing as it is off-putting. And there, that certainly sounds like a McDonough. There's also talk of monstrous characters, and no, not actual monsters of the fantasy kind, just the everyday kind. So when you hear that, your favorite phrase from our Three Billboards conversation during our top 10 show many moons ago, tone management, it better be managed pretty well, or this could be not so good. And I've gone for the tone so far in Martin McDonough's work and what I've seen, albeit just that one film, Calvary, of John Michael McDonough's work. So I am definitely enthused about The Forgiven, which comes out July 1st.
Yeah, tricky material, it sounds like, for sure. So we'll see what he does with it. John Michael McDonough, one of the rare instances of me doing an interview solo for the show, Adam.
That's
it was
right.
For Calvary. Yeah, got a chance to talk with him. Incredibly smart guy, as you can imagine. So yeah, we'll see what he does with this. I imagine he's up for the challenge. All right, moving on with our questions. My number four question, will A24's impressive horror run continue with Bodies, Bodies, Bodies? Now, A24's horror output, to me, has been pretty impressive. You've got Hereditary, The Witch, Lamb, St. Maud, just to name a few. And to spoil our upcoming review, I'm also a pretty big fan of Alex Garland's Men, another A24 picture, that one starring Jesse Buckley and coming out on May 20. Coming later this summer from A24 is Bodies, Bodies, Bodies from Dutch actress turned director Helena Rein. The plot? A murder mystery game gets all too real among a bunch of wealthy 20-somethings staying together at a mansion. So, intriguing. The stars here, Maria Bakalova, the breakout co-star of Borat 2, Rachel Sennett, who we both liked quite a bit in Shiva Baby. And then, just, you know, to spice things up, SNL's Pete Davidson, I guess. So that should be very interesting.
Who wants to play Bodies, Bodies, Bodies?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Does anybody have service?
Yeah.
I'm a hot girl. Pop girl, rich girl.
Guys, I get so stressed out every time we play this. Someone always ends up crying.
So how do you play?
Bodies, Bodies, Bodies arrives later this summer. That'll be here on August 5.
Yeah, we're wired very differently on horror films because you're writing a book about horror movies. And meanwhile, I see a title like Bodies, Bodies, Bodies and a quick descriptor somewhere online. And I'm like, no, I'm good.
That's you're fine. Out. Yeah,
no, I don't need horror.
Might be
I don't
one.
Need to be scared.
Might be one I'm checking out on my own.
My number four movie question, Josh. Let's see if you're ready for this. Isn't summer the season for existential reflection? Isn't that how we think about it?
Yeah. I mean, for you and me, I think.
Yeah, well, get the popcorn out for this question. If you died doing what you love most with the person you love most, was it all worth it? Now, I don't know if Fire of Love, directed by Sarah Dosa, will be able to answer that or cares to. But it is the question I couldn't stop thinking about when I first read the summary for it. Here is that summary. Intrepid scientist and lovers Katya and Maurice Kraft died in a volcanic explosion doing the very thing that brought them together, unraveling the mysteries of volcanoes by capturing the most explosive imagery ever recorded. So you hear that, and immediately there's shades of Werner Herzog's Grizzly Man, which is fitting since Katya and Maurice are in Herzog's 2016 documentary about volcanoes, Into the Inferno. And there's this paragraph that intrigued me from Owen Gleiberman's Variety review following its Sundance premiere. Were the Kraft scientist. She was a geochemist, he was geologist, and they became global experts in the field, but they weren't academics and they weren't researchers hauling their specimens back to the lab for study. The experience of being there, right on the edge of the Earth's convulsions, was their finding. They were a lot like storm chasers, and maybe like vertical rock climbers, with more than a touch of Jacques Cousteau and their pioneering desire to film what they saw and bring it to the world. So, words and phrases like on the edge and being there, it feels a little intense. And then Gleiberman quotes Katya from the movie. At one point, she says, "Once you see an eruption, you can't live without it." And there's something just kind of spooky about that and the way it encapsulates this type of obsession. And it's spooky, especially when you consider the irony of it. Dosa, the director, had access to their entire archive of footage, which apparently, as you might imagine, is pretty stunning. There is a clip from the film on YouTube, just like 45 seconds, where you see, I'm pretty sure it's Katya, who is approaching the spewing lava, and her husband must be filming, and he's not that far away from her, and she is getting right up near the edge to the point where she's just wearing like her normal coat, and it's about singeing her, and you are terrified watching it, even with the distance of the camera. And there's a little break where she goes off camera, and then when she comes back on, she's now wearing, you know, like a white protective outfit. Not that it would protect you from the lava if it really got all over you, but protects her body to some degree, and she just gets even closer to it. So you get a sense of just how dangerous these endeavors were, how willing they were to push that envelope. And Miranda July narrates the documentary. And her particular brand of absurdity and surreality might just be the match for these subjects and for this material. I haven't seen Dosa's last movie. It was called The Seer and the Unseen. It's a documentary about a woman trying to preserve Iceland's natural beauty that apparently incorporates a lot of magical realism. So that feels appropriate for this footage based on what I've seen and the way it's been described. National Geographic bought it coming out of the Fest circuit and is distributing it theatrically with Neon this summer. There isn't a date yet, but I did see it on multiple lists. Everyone is expecting it to come out this summer, and then it's going to stream later this year on Disney Plus. And sounds like a fascinating doc.
The early imagery, even just the still photos I've seen from this, are absolutely mesmerizing. And yeah, I've heard from a couple of folks who saw it either at South by Southwest or Sundance and were really, really high on it. Now, they didn't mention anything about the couple not making it out alive, so I hope you're not spoiling everything for everyone.
Oh, no.
Hopefully you discover that fairly early on in the documentary. But yeah, just hearing it for the first time, it absolutely add sort of a Grizzly Man-ish, you know, level of despair almost too, you know, knowing what actually happened to them. So this is one I'm looking forward to as well.
I didn't want to get too macabre as I was thinking about the film, but I'm assuming and hoping the footage that they were shooting at the time didn't make it either. Remember in Grizzly Man,
right?
That footage actually exists, or at least there's the audio, right? And we see Herzog listening to it, and he won't show it to us. I don't know the actual circumstances of their deaths, but no, my understanding is that's accounted for pretty early in the documentary, so it does imbue everything you're watching.
Unfold. Hanging over their story. Got it. Okay, my number three question. Will persuasion add fire to the great Jane Austen adaptation debate? Things can get pretty heated when Jane Austen fans discuss their favorite adaptation of the novelist's work. Do you like Gwyneth Paltrow's Emma or Anya Taylor-Joy's? Colin Firth's Pride and Prejudice or Keira Knightley's? Well, this summer, we're going to get Dakota Johnson in Persuasion, based on Austen's final novel. This one is about an Englishwoman who reunites with a man who she was engaged to but called things off with a number of years earlier. So this gives us a somewhat older Austen heroine. The director is Kerry Cracknell, who comes to the film from British theater. And in addition to Dakota Johnson, the cast includes Henry Golding and Richard E. Grant. Now, interestingly, there have been a couple of TV miniseries and a TV movie versions of Persuasion, but no feature film adaptation until now. I did discover, looking this up, that there is a contemporary set independent adaptation from writer-director Alison Mabe that's been playing some festivals, but that one doesn't have a release date beyond those festivals. So this will, I guess, be the first official theatrical adaptation for Persuasion. That's a book I haven't read, a Jane Austen book I haven't read. So as is my wont, I will maybe take this as an excuse to get to that one, though I'm going to have to hurry. July 15 is when Persuasion comes to Netflix.
It's funny because just a few hours ago, I was talking about this sort of with my daughter, Sophie, who you know and trivia spotters know from appearances where Sophie is alongside me, that she is obsessed. Her Letterboxd followers would also be very aware. She's obsessed with Joe Wright's Pride and Prejudice from 2005.
Yeah, the Keira Knightley, right.
Yeah, with Keira Knightley. And she watched both Sense and Sensibility and the Ang Lee one. And she watched Atonement. My beloved Atonement, without me, too, I might add, which I'm still a little miffed about. But she watched those both today, and I said, so what's it like seeing the best Joe Wright film? Knowing that I was jabbing her a little bit because she loves Pride and Prejudice, and she loved Atonement, too, but she maybe wasn't quite ready to go there. So deep is her love for Pride and Prejudice.
Do you know, has she seen the Colin Firth version, or?
I don't know. Actually,
which was also, if I'm remembering right, that was a miniseries, right?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. So
Jennifer Ely, right?
That sounds right, yep.
In that? Okay. Well, I'm going to stick in the art house here for my number three question about the summer movie season. What's it like when Penelope Cruz and Antonio Banderas star in a movie together that isn't Un Film de Almodóvar? A.K.A. seriously, before official competition, Cruz and Banderas never appeared in an Almodóvar film together? That blew my mind. Technically, they did. There's a brief moment where they're on screen together in Almodóvar's I'm So Excited, but this movie is all about them, with Cruz as an egotistical director, Banderas, it seems, maybe equally egotistical, but also not so bright. He's her movie star, and Oscar Martinez plays a highly acclaimed and respected theater actor who is also working on this project. It's an industry satire by a pair of Argentine filmmakers that are unknown to me, Gaston Duprat and Mariano Cohn. And these three come together because an aging billionaire who late in his life is seeking some prestige decides to bankroll this really important art house film. Both of these performers, Cruz and Banderas, just did some of their career best work in Almodóvar films, Parallel Mothers from last year, with Cruz starring, Pain and Glory from 2019. And no, as I said, this isn't an Almodóvar film, but I'm really excited to see them together. And you know how interested I am generally in movies that are about movies, even though this one seems to be more about the movie business than movie making. And that artistic process, the creative process, is one that usually appeals to me a little bit more. But with those two together, I am all in. It is another film that played at TIFF this past fall, 19 reviews of Rotten Tomatoes, 18 of them, for what it's worth, fresh so far. And hopefully we'll find out for ourselves, Josh, how good it is mid-June. June 17th is when it is set to come out. Official competition.
Yeah, the industry satire angle for me can be a little bit dicey, but with that pair heading it up, it's the chances are pretty good for it. All right, up next, Massacre Theater, where Adam just might get to play a maverick of sorts. Then we wrap up our summer movie preview. Stay with us.
May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Until you give your love, there's nothing more that we can do.
Apple from the garden?
Yeah, it was delicious.
No. Mustn't do that. Forbidden fruit.
Oh, God, sorry, I'm
joking.
Let me guess, he isn't joking, is he, Josh?
I mean, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what went down in Men, to be honest with you. And I saw it about a week ago, so.
Yeah. Because Annihilation wasn't tricky enough to navigate.
I'm also trying to figure out what went down in Annihilation, and that came out 4 years ago.
Yeah, Annihilation, Ex Machina, of course, from the mind of writer-director Alex Garland. We heard Rory Kinnear with Jesse Buckley in the trailer for his latest. It's called Men. Talk about scary. Just give me that title and shivers up and down my spine, Josh. It opens next weekend, the 20th, and next week on the show, we'll have a review. You have already seen it. As we are recording this, I'm about 24 hours away. Is there anything I can do to prepare myself, get in the right mindset for Men?
No, just go in blind. Like, try to avoid anything on social media about it. That would be my biggest advice. I think we both lean that way anyway in general, but particularly here, because I do have one question I want to ask you, and it might have to be something we do in spoiler talk at the end of our review proper, that will depend on you not knowing anything about it until you're actually in the midst of this thing.
Okay, everybody, gird your loins for Men and our discussion coming next week, along with the fourth film in our Buster Keaton marathon, 1926's The General. If you want to watch that one, do a little homework in advance of our conversation, you can find it to rent on most platforms. It's also streaming for free to subscribers of Amazon Prime and Paramount Plus. We always like to recommend searching for it at your local public library, though, maybe interlibrary loan. I know, Josh, that's the way you do it. I think you're obligated by the contract of your marriage to do that, though.
Just trying to be a good husband, Adam.
Right. Also, on next week's show, finally, the results from our current deeply flawed film spotting poll. But maybe we got this one right. Maybe Sam pulled it off, Josh. It asks simply, what is your most anticipated film of the summer? And here are the options we gave you.
Yep, it's Nope. Or Nope, it's something else.
Now, how did you think this one would come out? Did you envision in your mind us reading the poll results? And where did you have the percentages going?
I mean, it's always tough when there's only one option compared to the plethora of other
taking the field.
That being said, and we didn't touch on this, but I think you and I both, you know, before recording, mentioned to each other how this wasn't an exactly stacked summer movie lineup, at least from our perspectives, in terms of tons of big movies that we were anticipating. So that might, you know, give a slight advantage to Nope if other people feel that way. So I don't know. I probably would have initially said that the field might take it, but maybe Nope has a shot.
Yeah, Nope definitely has a shot. It is winning currently. I thought it would win by like a 2/3 to 1/3 margin. Mm. I thought it was just really going to run away with it. And it's really much closer to 50-50. If the comments are to be trusted, many of those something else votes are actually for Alex Garland's Men. I think producer Sam wants to kick those out because it doesn't count as a summer movie. Sam's very particular about when summer begins, apparently. It doesn't start until Memorial Day. But I'm here to say that most summer movie previews, in fact, I think everyone I looked at, pretty much starts with the month of May, and Men is definitely all over those lists. So, Sam, I think your reasoning there is flawed. Your poll question may not be deeply flawed. In fact, it's a pretty good one.
I'm trying to remember what movie it was. I mean, in general, my instinct is the same as Sam's, and definitely summer doesn't really feel like it starts until then. But there was a film maybe 10 years ago that kind of kicked open that first weekend of May. What could it have been? Maybe it's just because we reviewed it. Could it have been Spider-Man, 2002 Spider-Man?
It was May 2nd or May 3rd.
Yeah, so maybe it's 20 years.
Week of May.
Yep. Yeah. And that, I remember that being kind of a monumental shift when not only were they not waiting for Memorial Day anymore, but it was that first weekend in May. So it's been a while that Hollywood at least considers us to be in the midst of summer right now.
You can vote in that poll now and leave a comment. And if you do, we hope you'll let us know where you're listening from. And of course, tell us what other film you are more excited about than Nope. That's all at filmspotting.net. We recently announced a contest giving away 5 digital codes to see the new movie Uncharted, the new epic adventure film starring Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg. It is available to own now on digital, as well as on 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray and DVD. For a chance to win, we ask listeners to send us an email with their pick for the definitive Mark Wahlberg performance. We also got a ton of good responses via Twitter. Josh, here are the top 5 winners of that digital code.
Our first winner is Josh Compton from Windsor, Vermont. He shared this: definitive Mark Wahlberg, it's Blue Falcon in Scoob. And that's just so I can hear one of you say Scoob on the cast. I think I did that right.
I don't even know what Josh is talking about.
It's like a recent animated sort of Scooby-Doo spinoff or prequel or something like that.
Okay.
I edited an article about it, but it has since left my brain.
We have another winner from Vermont, Richmond, Vermont. He is Liam McKenzie. He says, Wahlberg's best performance? The only answer is The Departed, right? I can prove it with an anecdote. My brother-in-law saw a screening of the film in Boston in 2006. As soon as the credits rolled, he overheard 2 young men give their reaction to the film from the row behind him. One man turned to the other and gave his 3-word review with the appropriate accent, naturally. Feckin' Mark Wahlberg. If that's what you say immediately when the credits roll of The Departed, then yeah, maybe you are from Boston.
So Josh got my Scoob, and that was your Boston accent, huh?
Yeah. I didn't give you The Departed, but I kind of went there on the quote.
Okay. Just wanted to check. We have another winner here. Andrea Weaver from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Marky Mark's most definitive performance? It has to be The Other Guys. You just can't beat it. However, I personally enjoyed watching him in the 2007 film Shooter. Does that mean I have bad taste in movies? Probably, but I'll stand by it.
It does mean that, Andrea. I've seen Shooter. We also got this one. Speaking of Other Guys and The Departed, here's Matt White in Indy who says, I'm the guy who does his job. You must be the other guy. The Departed all the way. And our final winner is
Mario Mendez from Glendale, California. Favorite Mark Wahlberg performance? The movie Ted, where being upstaged by an animatronic bear is not only expected, but emphatically achieved. Shots fired.
You. Yeah, thank you, Mario. Thank you to everyone who entered. Again, Uncharted is available to own now on digital and on 4K Ultra HD, Blu-ray, and DVD. It's rated PG-13 from Sony Pictures Entertainment.
Quick note about our sister podcast, The Next Picture Show. They're taking the week off. They just finished up a Nick Cage double feature, Spike Jonze's adaptation, along with the new Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. So they're recovering from that extensive conversation. Next pairing should be coming next week, however, and this is going to be the new Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness with another Sam Raimi film, Army of Darkness. So going back towards the beginning of Raimi's career there. Your next picture show hosts are Tasha Robinson, Keith Phipps, Scott Tobias, and Genevieve Kosky. New episodes post every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can get more information at nextpictureshow.net. All right, let's get to Massacre Theater, the part of the show where we perform a scene and you get a chance to win a Film Spotting t-shirt. A couple of weeks ago, we massacred this scene.
You killed my mother. You killed my father. You killed my people. You took my father's sword. Ha!
It must have been when I was younger. There was a time, boy, when I searched for steel. And steel meant more to me than gold or jewels.
That was James Earl Jones and Arnold Schwarzenegger in 1982's Conan the Barbarian, written by John Milius, Oliver Stone, and Edward Sommer. Milius directed it as well. That massacre was part of a show that included our review of Robert Eggers' The Northman, along with our Buster Keaton marathon review of Sherlock Jr. So why that scene from Conan the Barbarian?
Here's Jeremy Webner-Berman. He's in Philly. He says, I think this was the fastest I've gotten the Massacre Theater ever. Josh's Arnie was spot on, and Adam's vampiric take on James Earl Jones' Thulsa Doom works surprisingly well. Snake, bat, it's all the same. There were a number of clues late in the show as well. Conan and the Northman both contain big, shirtless killing machines of men, though I doubt Alexander Skarsgård punches any camels. And of course, James Earl Jones was in a Shakespeare in the Park production of Hamlet in 1972, which the Northman is an alternate version of. And Ethan Hawke played Hamlet in the 2000 film.
Look at that.
Well done, Jeremy.
Kevin Harris also weighed in here. He's from Bloomfield Township, Michigan. I've never seen it, but given Josh's uncanny imitation of Arnold, what else could it possibly be? All right.
Point, counterpoint, Matt White in Indy, again, says, not to be gross, but it sounded like Josh's character was struggling on the toilet.
You killed my mother! You killed my father! You killed my people!
Wow.
Someone else, maybe a little more sophisticated, Josh, sorry, Matt, said that it sounded like you maybe were from the fictional country of Zubrovka in Ode to Wes Anderson.
Yes. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Michael from San Antonio shared this. I would shower Josh with praise for his rendition of Arnold, but for the fact that he was totally upstaged by Holden's performance at the episode's outset. I can't remember the last time a Film Spotting episode had me laughing so hard. I had to listen to that bit three times. Henceforth, I will always in the back of my mind think of Adam as King Adam movie talker.
As well you should.
I hope everyone they're going around kneel. Calling you that
yeah,
regularly in the household
King
now.
Adam movie talker. Yeah, Holden did win the Kempinar Kid conversation to be featured at the front of the show. But if you listen to the podcast and you did stay all the way until the very end, the outtake was a Sam mixed montage of my three other kids delivering the same line. And in case you didn't know that Sophie was a clone of me, was definitely my daughter, she did it first. Then after she heard how well Holden did, how he really went all in on it, so he's like, okay, I got to do it again. And then she gave more.
I like to think that you really set this up as some sort of battle to the end, initiation ceremony, and whoever did the best got to survive and the rest had to find a new home.
Yeah, they got to eat dinner that night.
Okay.
So only Holden got food. That's how it works at our house. Josh, reach into the hat and pick out this week's winner.
Our winner is David J.B. Krischoff from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Congratulations, David. Email feedback@filmspotting.net and we will set you up with your very own Film Spotting t-shirt.
That was the greatest acting I have ever seen.
I just don't know how you do it, Gary. How do you make yourself so somber and emotional to make everybody cry like that?
It's not that hard, really. I just think about the saddest moment in my life.
We move on now to this week's edition of Massacre Theater. One change to the script, maybe try to make it a little less obvious. There is a character name of sorts that we hear at the end.
A nickname. Yeah,
a nickname. We'll call it a nickname so we don't give anything more away. But it's going to tie in with a topic we're discussing on this week's show. I'm going to start it off. Are you ready, Josh? No funny voices this time.
No funny voices, but there is a bit of a gender reversal
yeah.
compared to how we usually do things.
That's
but
right.
I think it's fitting in this case, gives you a chance to live out one of your childhood dreams. Okay, this is it. This is as close as you'll probably ever get.
More clues. Okay, here we go. I started off. You're going to give me the action.
And action.
Honey, you know that global warming problem? I've discovered how we can reverse it.
Tell me.
Nah, not now, lovey bumpers. There'll be plenty of time for that later.
Mm-hmm.
And my investigation into the assassination of JFK?
You found the evidence you were looking for.
Yes, I have proof. It's right here in my pocket. It's big, honey. Really big. Goes all the way to the White House.
Do you want me to hold it for you?
No, it'll be safe right here. I'm in a jet. What could go wrong?
Ah, roadkill. We just couldn't be any more perfectly happy.
And, oh.
What?
And scene.
Scene. I don't get a kiss.
We were so in sync until
you left
the end.
Me hanging without the kiss.
I should have known that you would have stayed in character. You would have committed. You're a big fan of the special effects.
Oh my gosh. Well, we don't, there are no second takes in Massacre Theater, so that's what people get.
And what people get is now they know my true nickname for you, which is Lovey Bumpers.
Yes. That's how you have me in your phone whenever that's you get a text.
From here on out, anyway. If you know what film we just massacred, email the movie's title along with your name and location. The email is feedback@filmspotting.net. Your deadline is Monday, May 23rd.
The winner will be selected randomly from all the correct entries and announced in a couple of weeks.
You love this game. I mean, love it with your whole heart. Because if you don't, let's not even bother. Let's not open that door. They're just going to slam it right in our face. Look, I be
riding through my... The Sandman, Adam Sandler, sounding very serious indeed in the trailer for the upcoming Hustle. It comes to Netflix on June 10th. It has been on our radar for a little while, Josh, because we usually rely on Sandler to provide us with a terrible Netflix movie that will serve as punishment for losing our internal film spotting madness contest. This year, we changed that to a Sandler joint. What's that movie called that we decided on? It's also on Netflix.
I don't even remember.
James movie, Game Plan or something like that.
It's not Rob Schneider. It's Kevin James.
It's Kevin James playing Sean Payton, the now former coach of the New Orleans Saints.
Oh my gosh.
And his year off from football.
Home team.
There you go. I thought maybe it had home in it, but I went with Game Plan. I was incorrect. Hustle, though, a Sandler basketball movie, doesn't seem to be maybe too similar to Uncut Gems. It does, though, look pretty watchable, especially if you're a basketball fan, which you are, Josh.
It's watchable enough that I put it in my top five questions here about the summer movie season. Yeah,
let's
my number two. And I basically, it's kind of what you said. Actually, my question is just, after Hustle, will we have to officially retire our Sandler Netflix joke for film spotting madness? It's been a good run for that one, Adam, but hopefully it will end here. Let me give you the plot. This is from IMDb for Hustle. A washed-up basketball scout discovers a phenomenal streetball player while in Spain and sees the prospect as his opportunity to get back into the NBA. So, yeah, we've been joking about this, but I didn't really look into it much at all these last couple of months. Watch the trailer, finally, and as we heard, it is indeed Sandler in serious mode. A lot of motivational talk going on there that he sells pretty convincingly, I think, in the trailer. So at the very least, this is not Hubie Halloween or Ridiculous Six Fair. I think we can be pretty confident of that. There are a ton of NBA cameos in this. And in fact, the co-star, the Spanish player, is played by Juancho Hernan Gomez, currently a member of the Utah Jazz. So a lot of this might depend on how Hernan Gomez is as an actor, or at the very least, what sort of chemistry he has with Sandler in Uncut Gems. That, you know, there's some great scenes between Sandler and Kevin Garnett, former NBA player, that, you know, I don't think anyone would be looking to hand Garnett an Oscar, but those scenes had great electricity to them.
Yeah.
So if something like that happens here, then Hustle might be probably a very different film, but still a success in terms of a sports movie. Hopefully, yes, definitely different than Hubie Halloween. And then we could put those jokes to rest. June 8 is when we're going to get to see Hustle.
So this show, for us is going to be relatively short. And if we needed to fill some time, you could have asked me to name the NBA team that Hernan Gomez plays for. And we might have been able to, I don't know, get another 10, 12 minutes in at least just before I landed on Utah Jazz.
Let you list. We just sit here while you list every NBA team that until we get to the Jazz.
Yep.
That would have been riveting.
I think it might have been, but we'll never know. My number two question of the movie season, how does one possibly follow up Mad Max Fury Road? And I'm going to give a hat tip here to the playlist and their summer movie preview, 50 must-see films to watch, because that's from their preview and their write-up of 3,000 Years of Longing, their blurb on it. But I'm being totally honest, Josh, when I say the first time I saw those words appear, and I was reminded of this film and that it was coming out because we also did our 2022 movie preview earlier in the year, looking at the whole year, and this was a film I considered then. And as soon as I saw it, the only thing I could think of is, how the hell do you follow up Mad Max Fury Road? And then I read the first line, and it seems we're all thinking exactly the same way. But this is the new one from George Miller. When you see that its cast list is pretty much just Idris Elba in Tilda Swinton, which is also all you need to want to see the movie. And even if you read its premise, at least if you read it quickly, you could think, hey, maybe George Miller is following up Mad Max Fury Road by basically going to the theater. He's going to give us a low-key two-hander. The plot description is, a scholar content with life encounters a djinn who offers her three wishes in exchange for his freedom. I mean, this could be a play, right? And then you get to the next line. Their conversation in a hotel room in Istanbul, okay, still seems pretty intimate, leads to consequences neither would have expected. So you remember that it's George Miller. It is the guy who gave us Mad Max, who gave us the epic Fury Road, and it has that fantasy element to it. And your brain does start to imagine that it could be much, much bigger in scope. And apparently this is a movie Miller has been working on for over a decade, which I suppose could also suggest it might be a little unwieldy or something that he's trying to wrap his head around. We'll know what the reaction is to it later this month here in May, actually, pretty quick, because it's going to premiere at the Cannes Film Festival. And then it's going to close out the summer, August 31st, just before Labor Day. There, we're going to get 3,000 Years of Longing. Can't wait.
Yeah, and he has such an interesting career that, you know, any U-turn really shouldn't be a surprise in a way, though we all think of him as, you know, Mad Max, you know, the guy behind Mad Max. But you've got Babe, the two Babe films, of course, which are just wonderful family films. Then he made two animated films about penguins, the Happy Feet movies. And that was just before returning to Mad Max with the absolutely masterful Fury Road. So, yeah, this does seem like a little bit of a swerve from him yet again, but he's proven he can do that. So we'll see if he pulls it off once more. All right, we're down to our number one questions, Adam. And here's what I've got. With Nope, will the M. Night Shyamalan comparisons for Jordan Peele come true? Now, was it you, Adam? I couldn't remember if this came up in one of our conversations, but did you suggest after Peele's Us that he might be headed for a Shyamalan-style career downturn if he continues to rely on wilder and wilder original horror slash sci-fi concepts that might not always be able to deliver? I couldn't remember if that's where that came up and stuck in my head or if it was somewhere else.
Yeah, I feel like it might have been a topic of conversation, but I imagine more if I was trying to conjure up the worst case scenario. I don't really have any doubts about Jordan Peele doing that through two films, but I didn't really feel that way about M. Night Shyamalan either through two films.
Sure.
I'm thinking here of The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable. I hadn't seen Wide Awake and actually still haven't seen that film. But knowing he was so reliant on them, and then if one goes just a little bit askew, if that ending doesn't deliver, then what does it do to your experience with that film? And really, I suppose, with him as a filmmaker. And there was a point where that happened with Shyamalan, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to admit it, but I can see those parallels. They do make sense to me, even though in many ways they're very, very different filmmakers. And yeah, as you were saying, comparing their careers can be a little bit tricky because the Shyamalan we think of in his current form didn't really show up until his third film, right? The Sixth Sense. But if you do start there, then Nope, Peele's third film, that would be the equivalent of Signs for Shyamalan. So I love Signs. I think most people agree it still holds up. After that is kind of where things get tricky. Mm-hmm. The Village, then Lady in the Water. I held on until The Happening. It took The Happening to kick me off the bus. So chances are, Nope, unless it's Happening level disastrous, I won't falter here with Peele. But yeah, I think the comparison holds wherever that originated, and hopefully we don't get a Happening style release from Peele ever, let alone with Nope. Now you'll notice I haven't said anything about the plot because I don't want to know anything about the plot, especially in general, but especially with I don't even want to hear speculations, you know? So I'm not going to give you anything like that. I can tell you that it does reunite Peele with his Get Out star, Daniel Kaluuya, and also features Kiki Palmer and Steven Yeun. So Nope, we will find out what it's all about and how good it is on July 22.
Your reputation precedes you.
I have to admit, I wasn't expecting an invitation back.
They're called orders, Maverick.
All right. I tried to go against expectation here. I tried to avoid having a question about this film, Josh. But you can't put Maverick in a penalty box. Nobody puts Maverick in any kind of box. And after 2.5 years of waiting for Top Gun Maverick, my question is, could it be true? Could Top Gun Maverick actually be great?
great is a strong word, Adam, in our house.
And I'll say, earlier today, if you look at my Google Doc of notes here, you can go back through my edits and see where earlier it said, actually be good. And no, I went all in and said, actually be great. Because that's how I want it to be. And that's also, so far anyway, the thrust of the overwhelmingly positive takes I have seen coming out of screenings by
dads,
moviegoers and critics.
No, yes. I think you meant dads.
Yes, I do spend a lot of time on dad Twitter. And
it's your own little corner.
It is. And so far, you're right, dads are really excited. Now, I don't know whether or not Mike Ryan, who writes for Uproxx, is a dad or not. I follow Mike Ryan. I don't know anything about him. I don't know him personally. I don't even know his Twitter persona well enough to know whether or not any of this is a put on or if he's being completely genuine. But Josh, it reads completely genuine. And back on April 29th, when he saw Top Gun Maverick, he said this: "I just saw Top Gun Maverick. Did we really need a sequel to a 36-year-old movie? Yes. Yes, we did. This movie kicked my ass and killed me. I am dead. I am tweeting while dead." And then he followed that up with, "I love the original Top Gun, and Top Gun Maverick is a better movie."
Oh, man. Come on.
I know. So,
let's not get crazy.
I just want to know if it's possible that this film is a movie where, Josh, we could be sitting here reviewing it. And let's be clear. You do like the movie. I think you gave it mostly a positive review, didn't you?
Top Gun, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm favorable on Top Gun.
Okay, you're favorable. But you didn't watch it so many times as a kid that you can quote the entire film like me, right?
I think we like it for very different reasons. as came up when we did our live watch party with Film Spotting listeners a while back.
Yes. And I'm wondering if we could sit down to review this film and actually find both of ourselves talking about how great the characters are, how great the performances are, the additions here of Jennifer Connelly, of Miles Teller, of Glenn Powell, who I've been all in on since Everybody Wants Some, the Richard Linklater film. And we're talking about the action, which I do have to say, you watch the trailer for it, and it does seem to go to a completely different level than the original Top Gun went to. And I was pretty enamored with the action back then. I thought it held up even on rewatch in that regard recently.
Yeah, but action is good. We agree on that.
This seems spectacular. And when I think of a summer movie, it certainly brings me back to seeing Top Gun multiple times in the theater as a kid. And who knows, maybe I'll somehow end up, Josh, seeing this movie multiple times in the theater. Could it be good? Do you think it really could be good? Or do you think it's only for dads and people like me who loved the film 36 years ago and just love seeing Maverick doing Maverick things again on screen?
Well, I had a little phrase that Wendy Fox Weber, my editor at Naperville Sun for
who
many years,
Top Gun, by listener, the way. So you should not be quoting her here.
Listener of the show, when I would be heading out to something like Marmaduke or Garfield, because, you know, we reviewed everything, I would usually say, anything can be great, Wendy. Anything can be great. So I'm going to revive that. I tend to put it away now that we generally choose films to review on the show. We think we have a chance of, you know, appreciating and giving us good stuff to talk about. In the case of Top Gun Maverick, which I am sure we will be reviewing, I'm just going to say that anything can be great. And I'm going great, Adam. No good. Not just good. Great.
You better. Okay. We are in lockstep on Top Gun Maverick. We'll see if that will hold when the movie does open Memorial Day weekend or International Top Gun Maverick Day. Josh can be my wingman anytime, or we'll see if that lasts through the screening.
Wait. I thought I was your lovey bumpers.
Uh-huh. We'll stick with that. Those are our top five questions of the summer movie season. Josh, any honorable mentions, any additional questions we didn't get to, or just other titles you're excited about?
Yeah, I mean, I could just run through maybe the top five most anticipated. As I said, it's a little bit of a thinner schedule than in previous years. I don't know if that's still a pandemic hangover type thing or what, but I'm, you know, mildly excited about Thor, Love and Thunder. So I'd put that at number five for me. The Elvis movie from Baz Luhrmann, I'm still really intrigued by. I know you have your skepticism when it comes to Luhrmann, but Elvis, I'm going to see what we've got there. Could be interesting. Here's a really under the radar one that popped up only to me in my research, and it's Neptune Frost, which is coming to theaters June 3. I'm just going to read this description from IndieWire. Jude Dry, again, writing on IndieWire, the experimental Afrofuturist musical from multidisciplinary artist Saul Williams and Anicia Uzuman defies categorization, which is what makes it so exciting and confounding. Part contemporary operetta, part anarchist sci-fi saga, the dreamlike tale follows a gender-shifting soothsayer and an off-the-grid hacker enclave as they dodge the ravages of a senseless resource war. So after I've recovered from Men, hopefully I will be ready for Neptune Frost, which just sounds possibly quite dazzling. Crimes of the Future, the new Cronenberg, that's my second most anticipated, of course, which we've mentioned, I think, comes out in June. And then, yeah, Jordan Peele's Nope is at the top of my list. Cannot wait.
Okay. Well, you said anything could be great, and I was all in on that bubbly optimism, Josh. I was going to adopt it. It was going to be my whole new mantra. On movies, on life, really. It so struck a chord. And then you mentioned Baz Luhrmann's Elvis. And
does not and hold. Know, does not hold.
I know I can't go there. My top five, well, I've got a top four, and we've mentioned all of them. So I don't really have a lot to add. If I was going just strictly in order of the movies I most want to see, at number four, I'd have The Miller, 3,000 Years of Longing. Number three, Men, the Alex Garland film we're going to talk about next week. Number two, or no, it's really number one. Okay, fine. I'm going to go Nope at number two. And yeah, damn it, I'm going Top Gun Maverick at number one.
I mean, at this point, you kind of have to.
Yeah, I have to. My number five might either be the Cronenberg, though. Oh, man, we talked about horror earlier. Body horror makes me squirm even more, of course. So I'll be watching that with my eyes closed. I am, of course, very curious about the new Claire Denis as well. Talked about that a little with Steve Procopi last week as it's playing the Chicago Critics Film Festival here coming up. The Music Box is called Both Sides of the Blade. All I need to hear is that Juliette Binoche is in it, but then Vincent London in it as well. So good in Titan last year. But maybe, Josh, I would go with a little more populist choice. I am intrigued by The Gray Man. July 15th theaters, streaming on Netflix on the 22nd. I'm seeing some things about how it's supposed to be like Netflix's big tentpole movie of the year, their most expensive movie to date, which doesn't usually give me much confidence, but it comes to us from the Russo brothers. And really why I'm excited is that it's a spy movie, which I'm usually a sucker for, starring Ryan Gosling. You throw in Chris Evans and their former assassins, or they formerly worked together at the CIA and now they're tracking each other, sort of a cat and mouse game. I like those performers a lot. Add in Ana de Armas, Reggae Jean Page, who many may remember from the first season of Bridgerton. I have a feeling I will be plopping myself down on the couch, if not in the theater, around July 22nd to see The Gray Man on Netflix. And I suppose I have one other question. I'll stick in the art house here and I'll give you one more question, which is, am I ready for a Peter Strickland comedy? Peter Strickland, the filmmaker behind Barbarian Sound Studio, behind The Duke of Burgundy. There might be some elements in both of those films you would describe as humorous. I don't know what they would be, but if I remember, someone could possibly pick out a few interesting scenes. And then he's got a new film out called Flux Gourmet. This is the description. Set at an institute devoted to culinary and alimentary performance, a collective finds itself embroiled in power struggles, artistic vendettas, and gastrointestinal disorders. So, gonna be a little bit of a head scratcher, as you would expect from Strickland. Seems like it might make you a little bit uncomfortable at times as we talk about stomach problems and those gastrointestinal disorders. And yet it's supposed to be funny, Josh.
Summer blockbuster. Sounds like stereotypical summer blockbuster to me.
Yeah, apparently so. Those are our top five summer movie questions. We would love to hear your most anticipated summer movies and the questions you have. You can email us feedback@filmspotting.net. Josh, that's our show.
If you want to connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Letterboxd, you can do so at Filmspotting and at Larson on Film. In the show archives at filmspotting.net, you can find reviews, interviews, and top fives going back to 2005. You can also vote in the current Film Spotting poll, which looks ahead to the summer movie season. We're asking, what summer movie are you most anticipating? Jordan Peele's Nope or Nope, something else? To order show t-shirts or other merch, visit filmspotting.net/shop, and you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter at filmspotting.net/newsletter.
Out wide this weekend, Firestarter. This is, yes, based on the Stephen King novel. No, it's not a 38th anniversary re-release of the original film starring Drew Barrymore. And that's it. Next week on the show, we'll be talking about a film that opens next weekend, Men, the new one from Alex Garland, and we'll be looking back on a film that opened almost 100 years ago at this point, Buster Keaton's The General.
Film Spotting is produced by Golden Joe Dassault and Sam Van Halgren. Without Sam and Golden Joe, this show wouldn't go. Our production assistant is Betty Lavendero. Thanks also to Candace Griffiths and the listeners of the Film Spotting Advisory Board. And special thanks to everyone at WBEZ Chicago. More information is available at WBEZ.org. For Film Spotting, I'm Josh Larson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. Thanks for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Film Spotting is listener supported. Join the Film Spotting family at filmspottingfamily.com and get access to ad-free episodes, monthly bonus shows, our weekly newsletter, and for the first time, all in one place, the entire Film Spotting archive going back to 2005. That's at filmspottingfamily.com.